Take it away, Simon.
Hello, I'm Simon Mercer. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film, music, television, theatre, anything else that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and me lately. Speaking of Steve McCabe, I've been, Steve, keeping the home fires burning in Auckland in recent weeks. You, sir, have been away on our inaugural overseas public relations drive, I hear, winning international hearts and minds, I understand. Steve, tell me more.
Well, I did my best. I've been back home in England. And obviously, anybody I spoke to, I was trying to convince them they should be listening in. We might have lost an English, I don't know. It doesn't matter. I had a good trip.
What's the population of the UK? Tens of millions.
I think we're up to 60 million now. At least one of them, surely.
Yeah, at least one.
Yeah, we are that desperate.
don't be spreading that around. That's no good.
Sorry.
Yes. Anyway, that's good. Good to hear. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Glad to be back.
Did you actually catch a film or two or anything else offshore?
I did while I was there. I went to see Get Out because it was a film that I missed the press screening for. I forget why. And I remember seeing from the trailers, I kept thinking, this is a film I want to see very, very badly because it looks brilliant. We'll go to any length. I even actually tried downloading a dodgy copy of it.
Ooh, okay.
Couldn't get hold of a good dodgy copy.
So
in the end, I actually broke down and spent about £12 at the Odeon Cinema in the Trafford Centre near Manchester.
Okay.
I was awfully glad I did.
Oh, good, good. We'll hear more about that later. Good stuff. Now, one thing we've both seen is the latest from the cinematic juggernaut that is Marvel Studios. This time, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yes.
Yes. I thought was quite a bit of fun, but we'll come back to more on that too. We're just running through what's coming up for you on our podcast, the Crave podcast.
Absolutely.
Today. Also, Steve.
Also, we've got a first-hand report from the recent Blondie and Cyndi Lauper doubleheader at what we're now supposed to call the Spark Arena.
Oh, yes.
In Auckland.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if the name's changed yet, but I know. You know, meet the new boss. Yeah. I, for one, welcome our new alien overlords. And that was that's going to be coming from our special correspondent, Debbie, who's going to be talking about slightly older talent this time around.
Yeah, but that's all right. That's okay. Nothing wrong with the age and maturity and experience. And I'm talking it up here as much as I can. All right, yes, so that I look forward to talking to Debbie. Also, but later I'll reflect on the finale of Broadchurch. That's that British crime drama
that you've spoken very highly of recently.
Yes, I just thought it finally got to the end. It had its finale. I just thought I'd just have a quick comment about the series as a whole, remembering it tackled a pretty difficult subject, sexual assault. And so it was not a pleasant topic to deal with, but it did a good job. But anyway, Steve, let's start with you, fresh off the plane, as you are, and reasonably fresh from the screening of this film. Like you, I did see the trailer for Get Out. When the trailer started, Steve, I thought, oh, this looks like some sort of interracial romance drama. But I think it turns into something else, doesn't it?
Well, it does a very, very good job of wrong-footing the audience, I think. As you say, it starts off, as the trailer suggests, as an interracial drama, comedy of manners, social commentary. That's how it starts off pitching itself. But
yeah.
by the time you've seen the trailer, you've got a sense that that's not where it's going to be going. And the trailer doesn't lie, because what you end up with is the story of Chris is a young black man with a young white girlfriend named Rose. And this is Daniel Kaluuya, I believe his name is pronounced. He's a British actor.
Yep.
Who we've seen recently in, previously in Black Mirror, in one of the first series episodes.
Yes, I saw that. He was very good in there. I really enjoyed that episode, by the way, just in passing.
He is very good. Alison Williams, who we know from Girls. Are you familiar with that one?
No, sorry, not.
No,
pass.
Yeah, you've not missed much, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, okay.
Very, 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 very millennially, very zeitgeisty, and a little bit whiny in places. But she's definitely moved on from that now. She's playing a very, very interesting role as Alison, who's the daughter of an extremely waspy couple somewhere in Georgia.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
And she's taking her black boyfriend home to meet the family. What could possibly go wrong?
I can't
imagine. everything goes wrong. I'm not going to go into too much detail, other than, you know, to recap what we see in the trailer, where there is a big family dinner party, at which a lot of black people are in evidence, but they end up feeling like Stepford Wives of African Americans, and Chris starts to feel very, very uncomfortable trying to figure out what's going wrong, and the story basically is how the whole thing falls apart from there. And to put it this way, there's a couple of very, very creaky plot contrivances that shouldn't work.
Right.
But the story is so well told, in my opinion,
yes,
that you end up forgiving an awful lot.
Okay, that's interesting.
You allow Jordan Peele, who's the writer and the director of the film, to get away with a lot of silliness, in particular one thing about how hypnosis works, because he's doing such a fantastic job with the actors he's got. He's got an amazing cast who are clearly deeply involved in the roles they're playing. And it takes you, I don't want to give too much away here, it takes you in a direction you don't entirely expect, and it's not as simplistic as the trailer would lead you to believe.
I'm very pleased to hear it's fairly complex. Yes. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, isn't it? The whole issue of what you're willing to let ride. You know, if you're so engaged in the story and the characters, you'll forgive the director quite a bit, won't you? Just because you're enjoying it so much.
Well, absolutely. You're willing to, you know, he's doing such a decent job with the story. You think, okay, if that's what it takes to let him tell me this story, hey, I'm all for it. And that was how I viewed this film. It's remarkably well done, as well as, you know, the two central actors. You've got a very, very strong supporting cast. So, for example, Catherine Keener plays Rose's mother, with absolute ickiness. She is slimy in the most terrifying ways. The whole thing is remarkably well written, well performed. The pacing, nice, I think, is about the one thing I would fault it for.
Okay.
It's an hour and 44 minutes. Because I had to make plans for the rest of the evening, I'd look to see how long it was going to last. And the cinema website said 2 hours 44. I thought, okay, fair enough. It's going to be a good film. I'll enjoy it. But, you know, that's how long the film's going to be. And about an hour in, and I'm thinking, how on earth are they going to spin this out for another hour and 44?
Yes.
I thought it's a bit slow. But then suddenly, when the resolution comes, oh, by God, the resolution comes.
Okay.
And it doesn't waste any time at all in resolving itself. So it's sort of like, you know, slow. There you go. There, enjoy that now.
Yes.
But it's an odd way of structuring a film. But again, like I say, I was sufficiently impressed with it.
Yeah.
That I'm willing to forgive an awful lot. I'm struggling here to tell you much about it without stepping into spoiler territory, because there's a lot going on that pulls itself together at the end. All I can tell you is it's very, very good.
That's enough for me. I had already decided I was pretty keen to see it, and I haven't managed to yet, Steve, so I'm very happy for you not to spoil it for me.
Yeah.
And I will go and see it. So, it looked like it had something a little different about it, which was great. Oh, good stuff. All right, so that was Get Out. Now, actually, this is weird. I think officially it doesn't open in New Zealand until later this week, but a few cinemas have already started showing it, so yes. I'm slightly confused about when it's been released in some cinemas already, but there's a broader release in a few days, I think, is what I...
Yeah, this is the thing these days, as well as you know, you have your official opening date, and then you have, obviously, ahead of time, and in Get Out's case, a long way ahead of time, there are the private, the closed press preview screenings.
Yeah.
But then increasingly there's a trend toward having preview screenings a day, 2 days ahead of the official release dates. And it sounds like they're milking that one an awful lot on this.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
The thing is, it opened in February in the US, And I know it had been playing for quite a while in the UK when I saw it.
Right.
So it seemed, all I'm thinking is it's getting a lot of buzz and it's well deserved.
Yeah, and it's done pretty well at the box office, isn't it?
I believe it has. I mean, it was made on something of a shoestring. I mean, like I say, it's got fantastic talent in it, but it's not got any real A-list cast in it. So the budget was around $5 million, and apparently it's made in its opening weekend in America. It took $33 million.
Right. Well, there you go. Yeah.
So it's acquitted itself quite nicely, and it deserves to be doing well. I mean, you know, I'm looking at numbers on IMDb here, and it's making hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yep. So that's a great return. Not that we should be overly concerned about such matters, but it does give you an idea of how well it's caught people's imagination, which is interesting.
Yeah, highly, highly recommend it. Buy a ticket, go and see it. It's not quite the film you'll expect from the trailers. It's not the horror that it's made out to be.
Okay, that's all good. Thank you so much. I shall do that. I'll let you know next time.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what you make of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one we did see together.
Yeah.
After Get Out was the little low budget insignificance to begin with, one we did see together was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, to give it its full title.
Yes.
Which I suspect $4.5 million was probably just Chris Pratt's costume budget.
I would say so. Yeah, I reckon. No. I actually tried to find out a little bit about the official figure of their production budget of this movie. I didn't get very far, but I suspect it was rather big. But the first one, you saw the first Guardian of the Galaxy movie, I think.
I did.
And generally, I think that was regarded as certainly was a commercial hit. And I think rather surprisingly so, because I think most moviegoers would not necessarily have heard of these characters. If you were a Marvel Comics reader, you probably would have. But otherwise, that was a relatively unknown bunch of a gang of characters. So the first one came along. It had a sort of quirky humor, a lot of action, great music, and it won a lot of fans and made a lot of money. But now that cat's out of the bag, everyone knows what to expect the second time around. And it's always hard to repeat that sort of success, I think, with movies. You have seen it. Overall, Steve, how did you enjoy yourself or not?
Well, put it this way. Here's about the best thing I can say about it, or the most insightful thing I can say is, I want you to tell me the story.
Okay. Yes. Well, if you've read my review on the website, you'll know that that's where at one point where I think it slightly was in its weaker aspect. But the story, if you did see the first one, you'll know that that first one started out with a young Peter Quill who was, as an adult played by Chris Pratt, who was kind of the main hero, if you like, whisked away from Earth by some sort of bunch of alien beings. And throughout that first movie, we're not quite sure why that happened, and we never find out who his father is. Now, the second film picks up that thread and answers the question, who is the father of Peter Quill, and why was he taken from Earth, and what happened to him in between him being whisked away as a youngster and then turning up as an adult later on. So much of the initial story of Volume 2 is laying that out, and I think there's been enough of it explained on the trailers that I can tell you that the father is the character played by the actor Kurt Russell, and is called, interestingly enough, Ego.
Yes, and if you actually bother to watch the film, you'll discover that it's actually quite a reasonable name for him.
It is. And that actually is was a character in the comic books way back in the 60s. There was a character called Ego who was around. So this wasn't just dreamt out of thin air. Really the story is about how Peter and the father connect and why that might not be such a lovely, warm relationship as you might wish. Bendy, and I don't want to say much more than that, but there are some other threads running through, but most of the other story threads are really all to do with the various relationships that are bouncing around throughout the movie in a very large cast. And I think if you are going to sort of throw a plot criticism at this film, it is that there isn't maybe a lot of it. And it's a bit murky and mucky at times. I think that would be fair.
Oh, it's profoundly murky and mucky. It's all over the bloody place. But But the thing is, I mean, looking through my notes, and I tried to sort of write down comments about it, but in the end, the thing that kept coming back to me was it's an awful lot of style. And let's be fair, it's a fantastic amount of style. It looks brilliant. It plays very well. You've got some great actors in there who are clearly having a lot of fun with each other.
Yes.
You've got a very zippy, very whiz-bang script that goes all over the place.
Yep.
It's, again, it's James Gunn who wrote and directed the first one as well.
Yes.
Who has just got zippy, zingy characters saying zippy, zingy things to each other. And it is fun. I mean, you know, characters like Rocket, the little space rat thing voiced
raccoon.
By Bradley. Yes. Yes. He prefers Trash Panda, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Played by Bradley Cooper. Is a great character who's got loads of one-liners. You've got, what's his name? I'm checking my list here. Drax, played by Dave Bautista, who is, in terms of the narrative, utterly pointless, utterly irrelevant.
Yes. But.
And yet. We have a new character called Mantis, played by the wonderfully titled Pom Klementov.
Yeah, where'd that come from? Anyway, yes, quite right. Yes,
so actually Quebec City, apparently.
Oh, thank you.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, the interplay between those two is lovely.
Yep.
And it's almost as though the story gets in the way. You'd have a lot more fun if you just allow the characters to have some fun with each other, which is essentially what happened in the first film, really.
Yeah. I actually, as I was watching it, I think that's pretty much what it is. It's kind of a relationship buddy movie more than, and the story is kind of incidental, really, because the relationships developed to a certain point at the end of the first film, and this is now that they carry on in the second film with, as you say, Steve, one or two new characters brought in, and I really want to mention the character called Yondu. This is played by Michael Rooker, who was very much an out-and-out baddie in the first film and maybe isn't quite as bad in the second. I thought he just chews up the scenery really well.
You know what? To be fair, there's a miracle there's any scenery left at the end of this film.
That's right. The thing that I wasn't too worried that the plot was a bit all over the place. I just was enjoying the performances and enjoying the script and the humour. I have to tell you that I and many of the people around me were watching it spent a lot of time just laughing in this film, Steve.
Yeah, it's a very funny film.
Yeah, and as the first film did, they put together a nice little mix of 70s hits and some well-known and some not so well-known. People, I mentioned this in my web review. At one point, there's a wonderful soul classic from Sam Cooke. And a bunch of Pacific Island guys sitting along from me started singing along with it. It was great. They had beautiful harmony.
Fantastic.
So people were very much into it. And people actually clapped at the end of the movie. So I think it's one of those things where it's only entertainment. You know, it's just they're having a bit of fun.
But it's very, very big budget, very, very no expense spared entertainment.
That's true.
And I think one thing that's worth mentioning is that This is a film that, for my money, points up the difference between Marvel and DC. It shows the two studios in the starkest of release.
Yeah. Yep.
You think when Marvel want to do a quick bit of off the cuff fun, this is what they toss off, and it's a cracker. When DC tried to do it, they came out with Suicide Squad.
I know.
And you could hardly ask for two films more polar opposites.
No.
And it just shows the difference. Marvel now just seem to do this kind of thing effortlessly. It just seems to be like almost in their sleep.
Yeah.
They're churning out films like this.
Yeah.
Whereas Suicide Squad was focus group to within an inch of our lives, I think.
Oh, gosh. One point just on that difference, Steve, as in many of these, I think almost all these Marvel films, there was in this one a little cameo from a man called Stan Lee.
Of course it was.
Yes. So who was the chap who was one of the co-founders of Marvel Comics way, way decades ago and was the guy credited in the 60s with really ushering in the era of Spider-Man and Hulk and all these other characters. And one of the reasons that they became so popular around the world was he, and he's written about this, wanted to write something, it's not Shakespeare or anything, but it give the characters a little bit of shade. And so all the bad guys weren't bad just because that's all they can be, and all the good guys had, you know, had their bad moments. He was trying to make it a little, put a little more flesh on the bones of the goodies and the baddies. And that's kind of carried on right through, not taking yourself too seriously, having a bit of fun. Some of the humor here is quite goofy. Some of it is quite clever. But as you say, it looks like the people on screen are enjoying themselves, and it's very, and that's quite an infectious thing, isn't it? It catches on.
In this particular instance, yes, I'd say absolutely did. I mean, I'm just actually looking at the IMDb cast list.
Yeah.
As we speak, and I'd forgotten some of the cameos. You mentioned Kurt Russell, who doesn't really have a whole lot to do for most of the film, but then you've got Sylvester Stallone,
yes,
who appears a couple of times.
Yeah,
you've got the wonderfully titled actor Jimmy Urine.
Yeah, I know.
You saw that in the credits at the end.
I said, yes.
Bizarre, isn't it? But then, if you look at the rest of the cast listed alphabetically, this is rest of the cast.
Yes,
Seth Green, Ving Rhames, Michelle Yeoh. Miley Cyrus.
I missed her. Where did she pop up? I missed that.
Played the mainframe computer voice.
Ah.
You've got Jeff Goldblum was in there. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, even, and we'll save the surprise, but there is somebody who's credited as playing a character called Zardel Hasselfrau.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's an astonishing cast list, isn't it?
It is.
You get the feeling in a film like this, what's probably happening is that the producers start going around saying, like, okay, Guardians of the Galaxy, make a new one, hands up who fancies it, and the entire of Hollywood's going, me, please, me, which is how you end up with the cast that you've got, which is really quite remarkable, really.
I mean, this isn't, as you said, Steve, how would you call it, an entry in the serious category of superhero movies, like the, you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman films or anything like that. This is purely they've spent a lot of money to just for you to sit down and just have a bit of a laugh. And you've got, and they do get cheesy and they do get schmaltzy, and it gets a bit cringeworthy here and there. But most of the time, they manage to pull it back from going spending too far in that territory and just bounce onto some other joke or visual gag or whatever, and just keep it rolling along.
Yeah, I can't argue with a word of that.
Yeah.
So what do you reckon? Are people to rush out and buy tickets for this?
Yes. I think it's on a Friday night or a Saturday night out. You just want to have a laugh. Go see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
It won't be bothering the Academy next year, I don't think.
No. Except
possibly for technical effects. But
yes,
it was awfully good fun.
It was. I mean, just that, I won't go on too much about it, but I just thought there's an early scene where the Guardians are fighting a space monster. It's very early on. Now, how many times do we see that in movies these days? Well, it's a million and plus times. So how do you make that a bit different? Well, how about if you put, I don't want to give too much away, but a very well-known song from the 70s with one of the characters dancing to that song while all the action's unfolding behind them. That just took that, what could have been a very ho-hum scene, into a very enjoyable one, I thought. I thought that was well-timed and well-executed.
It also screams, we're not taking this terribly seriously.
Absolutely, yeah, not.
Quite frankly, neither should you.
No.
Now, like I say, scatter shots all over the place, but awfully, awfully good fun.
Well said, sir.
Thank you very much. So I think it's time to move away from films. Now, there's a couple of films we've talked about there, but we'll talk about another couple now. You see what I did there? It was quite good, wasn't it? couple of singers who arrived in Auckland just recently. They even played a couple of venues. They played Christchurch as well. Damn, but I'm good. We're obviously talking about Cyndi Lauper and Blondie, who, I have to be honest, I didn't think were the most obvious combination. But clearly somebody did. And apparently they were quite good. And so we've managed to enlist once again the services of our intrepid guest reporter, Debbie.
So Debbie is our special correspondent, yes, yet again for Crave, and this time at the Victor Arena, having seen Debbie Harry and Cyndi Lauper not that long ago. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
First of all, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the show, just give us an idea of the the vibe of this. Did you get a sense or a lot of people of a certain age group looking to relive their youth going along to this concert or what?
Yes, absolutely. That was the overall vibe. Yes, it was a lot of people. Gosh, I guess 50 plus, I'd say. Some that looked considerably older than that, and a lot of them were dressed, kind of fun. So that was cool. But
Okay.
there was a lot of sort of head bopping, and most people just sat throughout the concert, which I'm not really used to.
Okay. Were there seats on the actual main floor as well as the side?
Yes, there
Gotcha.
wasn't a mosh pit, and I think whoever, set that up probably figured that the audience would be more people who would sit.
Geriatric is the word you're looking for.
Okay, I wasn't going to say
Yeah.
that.
Hey, just about the structure of this, I'm never quite sure how this works when you have two name artists, Debbie. Was it like two halves, or did they join forces? How did it work, the actual?
Well, it's basically like two halves, and from what I gather, they switched depending on what city they were playing. I believe it was Christchurch where Blondie and Debbie Harry came on first, and then Cyndi Lauper, whereas at Vector, Cyndi Lauper came on first, and then Blondie with Debbie Harry.
So cool. Well, tell me what your overall impression was.
It was all right. It was a bit of fun. There were a few moments when I actually felt bored, kind of looked at my watch a few times. But overall, I mean, it was fun. I mean, I've never been a really big Cyndi Lauper fan, but I really liked a few of her big numbers, True Colors and Girls Just Want to Have Fun. But other than that, I wasn't a really big fan, although she's absolutely adorable, and she still is.
Okay, I guess one of the questions that always arises with any artist who's got a little bit of had a bit of a track record or been around a year or two is how their voice is holding up after, a few decades on. What did you
Sure.
make of both of them?
Well, actually for both, I felt like their voices were a bit low in the mix, and I wondered why. But I will say with Cyndi Lauper, she had a really strong finish. Her encore, or one of her encores, I can't remember if she did two, was True Colors, which she sang a cappella, and
Oh, nice.
she had a beautiful strong voice. In fact, I thought it was her strongest number. I loved that.
Okay. And Cyndi Lauper's an interesting character, isn't she? She's done,
Very.
I mean, to put it mildly, but I mean, apart from the music, I think she's become quite an activist.
Yes.
She did, I think she's known for having quite a sense of humor as well. Did that come through?
Absolutely. She talked to the audience on a number of occasions, in one case telling kind of a long, very funny story, and really got a lot of good reaction from the audience, a lot of laughter. She could be a stand-up comic.
What was the reference to Trump?
Oh, she actually forgot the words to one of her songs completely. Like, she just had a brain freeze, I guess, and she had her guitarist Googling the song so that she, and it was an audio version. So she was, holding the guitarist's phone up to her ear and she's listening. And then she's, oh, yeah, now I remember. She goes, I think somehow I forgot it on purpose. And she said, well, actually, I thought of Trump. And I got so upset that I forgot the words to my song. So she blamed
Nice.
it on Trump, but she handled it well. She ended up getting the audience to laugh quite a bit through it, and then, did manage to pull the song off after
Yeah.
she was reminded of the words.
Oh, nice. And as you mentioned, some of the big songs she's known for, like True Colors and Girls Just Want to Have Fun. She did a blues album not that many years ago. Did she play any blues?
Quite possibly.
Okay.
Sorry, not sure.
It's all right. It probably would have been a bit of a change from the 80s pop. Okay, what about Debbie Harry? I mean, I think she's in her early 70s
I
now.
believe she's 71, yes.
Right. Okay. So, in terms of a stage performer, how did she get on?
She did really well. I mean, you could see that she had aged, in my opinion. But she did really well. She did come out in a bit of a ridiculous outfit, though. She was wearing what looked like the sort of black front cape that you would wear at the hairdresser's, and it had a political message on it that I can't repeat. And she was wearing dark sunglasses, which was okay, but the whole thing altogether just looked a bit ridiculous. But she eventually took the cape off, and she was wearing a really nice suit. Kind of a cream-colored suit with a sparkly t-shirt underneath, which I thought looked really good. She took her sunglasses off, and she looked good. I don't
Okay.
think she needed the sunglasses. At first, when she first came out, I thought, gosh, does she need those sunglasses? Does she look that bad? But she looked great. So, and at one point, I guess, she was feeling the temperature and took off her jacket. So she was wearing a sparkly, really cute sparkly t-shirt and nice trousers. And she looked great. She looked fantastic.
Nice. And we know, I guess, the big hits like Heart of Glass and Call Me and, I don't know, The Tide Is High. Did we hear those sort of songs?
Yes. Yeah, she played all her hits. The band was good. She was good. Again, her voice was a little low in the mix, and I kind of wondered why. Maybe her voice isn't as strong as it used to be. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're not in raptures, forgive the pun, but you are. But you had a reasonable night out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a reasonable night out. It wasn't my favorite concert, to be honest. I was never a big fan of either Cyndi Lauper or Blondie. But I always liked them. I mean, it wasn't something I disliked. I really liked their big hits. I think I would have liked the concert more had there been a lot more energy from the audience, to be honest.
Right, right. And having said that, when people were leaving at the end, did you get a sense that most people enjoyed their time or
yes.
not?
Yes, I did get that sense. Yeah, okay. I think I have different expectations for concerts maybe than the people who attended that particular concert.
Yeah, it's the cultural divide between the USA and New Zealand, maybe. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so, because my experiences for a lot of the concerts that I see here in New Zealand are a lot different. Mosh pit, a lot of energy, people really getting into the concert and, you know, really becoming part of it. That's what I'm used to, so.
Yeah. Maybe that whole thing of just laying seats out just diminishes the...
I think so.
The energy, yeah. It's a bit of a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie, thank you. Thanks for yet again donning the Crave correspondence uniform and doing it.
Absolutely. I'd love doing it.
Good stuff. Thanks, Debbie.
Okay. Thank you, Simon.
Yeah. So I think I probably would have enjoyed that concert, Steve, but I'm not sure whether I would have bought a ticket. It's a terrible thing to say, but I...
Well, I have to be honest. I was never a huge fan of Cyndi Lauper, definitely a big fan of Blondie growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
I can still sing a lot of their greatest hits off the top of my head right now. But having heard that review, I'm starting to lean toward the maybe people shouldn't be playing when they're quite that old.
Yeah. Or at least put even a small mosh put up there to get the people going a bit. That might help anyway.
I know, but then you need St. John's Ambulance on call, you know, with an orthopedic surgeon on standby. It might not be pretty, to be fair.
It might be worth it, though. All right, yes.
Moving as swiftly onwards as is humanly possible.
Please.
I think we need to return to something that you've been talking about previously. You've been very, very taken with the British crime drama Broadchurch, haven't you?
Yeah. So this is the one that's been having its third series shown here on TV1, and the finale was just a weekend or two ago now. I just want to come back to it, Steve, because we talked about it sort of about halfway through, and we had a – because this was a series which dealt with a pretty dark subject, not the usual fare of a whodunit of a murder mystery. No, this was sexual assault, and – I remember we had a chat a few weeks back, Steve, and we're talking about how, you know, in New Zealand we've had all these issues in the public domain about young men and their views on consent and how to regard young women with respect being all askew, and we've had the Roastbusters, yes, and all that sort of stuff. So I was keen to sort of follow through with the series, see where it took us. And by the end of it, actually, I almost felt that the whodunit was almost not as important, although it was well done, but not as important as the actual sort of commentary of modern social ills that was going on.
Right.
that was being shown to us. Of course, in the final episode, it is all tied together. And I think it's a couple of weeks ago now, so I think we can talk about the result. And the result is actually fits very much into the discussion you and I had earlier, Steve, because in the end, the culprit of the young fellow who committed the rape was a teenager who'd been groomed into this by another bloke who wasn't that much older. So that was awful. And it just showed how this series, it was trying to sort of throw some light into this whole area of sex and consent from all sorts of different perspectives of old men, young men, yes, married men, previously married men, fathers, brothers, all sorts of it was well directed, it was well acted, it was compelling, it wasn't comfortable viewing. let's be clear on that.
No, it sounds like it wouldn't be. Yes,
one thought I had at the end, Steve, and was you know, in this series, there were a number of teenage characters who were grappling with these issues as well. And it actually crossed my mind, I put this in the web review, whether you could actually take something like this and it could be part of a high school sexual education course. I say part of one, with adults being involved and talking about it and so forth. I mean, it's been a while since I've been at school, obviously. I'm not quite sure what the sex education curriculum's like these days. But what are your any thoughts on that? Could a high-quality drama series be a useful addition, I wonder, to high school students?
I would have thought so. I mean, the issue might be attention span.
Yeah.
If you've got kids with sufficient maturity, you could probably make that work.
Yeah.
My concern would be that, I mean, how many episodes were in this?
Oh, yeah, no, probably 7 or 8, probably something like that. Yeah.
And there's going to be all manner of profound character development going on. There's going to make for outstanding television.
Yes.
But I don't know, kids these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the attention span issue, I would have thought. But I think you make a very interesting point, though, and it could certainly be the kind of thing that a teacher could recommend after school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was shown at 8:30 at night, so that's not too late. When it was interesting to show it at that time, because it was not often, you know, the material being discussed was and it was some quite upfront language being used to describe what had happened. So it was quite confronting. But I think because the younger age group was involved in this telling of the story, I could see a possibility of young people perhaps connecting with it. There's one other quick thing about this series, Steve, which it had characters in it right from the very beginning of the first series. And that first one dealt with the sad death of a young lad. And this series has done something which probably a lot of TV drama doesn't get the opportunity to do it. It's tracked the story of a family grieving for the loss of a child, and right through the three series, and the parents who survived this, and the siblings of the young fellow who died. And I think that also is not comfortable viewing and difficult. But I think the writers deserve some credit for having the guts to actually, you know, show that in a compassionate but a hard way, and giving us perhaps, if you haven't had this terrible experience, some really useful insights into what people go through. It was, I thought that was a very strong and positive aspect of the series. It's not something you're going to watch for a light entertainment. It's a far, far, far galaxy away from Guardians of the Galaxy, but
oh yes,
it's serious drama, well done. And this third series, I think, was probably the best of the three.
I'm going to have to start giving this a look. I've heard this from you several times now. I've heard it from other people as well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah.
To my eternal shame, I need to get my arse in gear, don't I?
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to rush out and have a look at it, and you've already been in the right mood to watch it. But the other thing is it's very well produced and directed, and it looks good. You know, they've spent a lot of time on their the direction and the editing, the shots are well constructed, and it's a classy looking piece of drama.
Right.
That's another aspect of it. So, but I think I need a breather after talking about all this serious stuff. Have we got any, we've got some quite interesting films coming up in the next little while, Steve.
We have. There's one that's being screened tomorrow. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make it. The Zookeeper's Wife.
Yeah. Now that's got that New Zealand director, hasn't it?
Nicky Carroll.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to make that the media screening either. But that if I get a chance, I will try and catch that one, see what Nicky Carroll has been up to with her latest in project. So that would be quite good to see that.
Yeah,
I don't know what the films like that. You're not never quite sure how long they'll necessarily be around for. They may not get a huge run at the cinema. So. Let's hope that because there's been a few New Zealand movies out lately, Steve.
Yes.
Which, you know, be nice to for people to get a chance to support. So I'm just trying to recall. I mean, Nicky Caro was Whale Rider was the film that she really became very well known in this country. That's going back a little way now.
Going back a long way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But people know who she is, and there'll be a lot of interest in seeing how she's got on.
Well, little by little, New Zealand started to put punch above his weight there. Now, here's a quick... I'm stretching this one a bit too far. The Connection.
Yeah.
Through Broadchurch and Guardians of the Galaxy.
The connection. Oh, gosh, truth. There may be an actor in common. Oh, could there be an actor in common? I can't think of one. No, you've got me. Okay, what is it?
Doctor Who.
Of course. Oh, hold on. That's David Tennant, who plays
David Tennant plays the titular Doctor.
Yes. And
new female character in Guardians 2.
Yes.
Nebula.
Yes, I'm with you, sir.
Sister of the bizarrely named Gamora.
Yes.
Always wondered about that name.
Yeah.
It's played by Karen Gillan.
Uh-huh.
You're not a Doctor Who fan, clearly.
Yeah, sorry, you can hear me, yeah. Just like air of puzzlement in my voice.
I am something. They never appeared together.
Oh, okay.
You are, I'm sure, familiar with the idea of multiple Doctors.
Yes, I am. Yes.
When David Tennant's Doctor transforms into the next Doctor, played by Matt Smith,
yeah,
famously. He says to the character Amelia Pond, played by Karen Gillan, your face was the first face this face saw.
Ah.
So those two never met, but they were both in Doctor Who. And I would say, just for the record, Karen Gillan probably by far the best companion the Doctor ever had.
Okay.
Oh. That was as good as it ever got for my money.
Okay.
So moving swiftly onwards.
Upwards and outwards into the galaxy. There's another space movie coming up quite soon, Steve. I think it's only a week or two away.
Which one's that?
Alien, the next Alien film.
Oh, of course,
Ridley Scott's.
Yes.
This one's called Alien Covenant, and I believe that it carries on from where Prometheus left off, which was a prequel that Ridley Scott directed a few years ago now, which didn't capture all the critics, it's got to be said. Wasn't an entirely successful film, but I kind of went with it. And it's left the story was left hanging at the end of that film, and I understand this one picks it up. So, I mean, I'm just out of curiosity, if nothing else, I will definitely go and see this one.
I just can't help but feel that that's being milked a bit more than is entirely wholesome.
You might be right. You might be right. It's got my Michael Fassbender, I think, is back with the story or the character of the, and I've forgotten the name of the android that he plays, and one or two of the other characters I think are returning. But you might be right. There's this sort of interest in how Ridley Scott himself can still make a movie. I'm not quite sure how old he is now, but he'll be getting on a little bit, so it'll be interesting in that too. I'll go see it. I'll let you know.
We'll give it a look, definitely, absolutely. Okay. There's some interesting music announcements coming up come out recently for the next year. People plan ahead a lot these days. Mm. Were you a fan of Cat Stevens back in his day?
Actually, I was, you know.
Well, you know, it gets confusing how to even talk about the fellow these days. His press release is clunky. It refers to him as Yusuf / Cat Stevens.
Thank you. Yes, I knew he'd left the name Cat Stevens behind, but if he just promoted himself as Yusuf, a lot of the world wouldn't know who he was.
In fact, I don't know if you noticed, but we keep coming back to it, don't we? In the opening, the closing credits to Guardians of the Galaxy, because the film Peace Train, the song Peace Train is in it, it actually says, Peace Train, written by Yusuf Islam, performed by Cat Stevens. And I'm thinking, oh, that's nice. It's a cover version.
I have to interrupt. I think it was Father and Son, or was it Peace Train as well in Guardians of the Galaxy?
I'm willing to be wrong on that one.
Well, I think Father and Son was there because
you know you're quite right. It was there, but
maybe there was Peace Train. There may well have been Peace Train too.
You're right. You're right. Father and Son. You're quite right. And of course, it would be, wouldn't it?
It was about Peter Quill's dad. Yes,
exactly. Yeah, but. Yusuf and Cat Stevens are both coming to Auckland. So another of those double bills, I guess.
Yeah.
But they're going to be playing in Auckland in December.
December, okay, yeah.
December the 13th. They're also doing Christchurch and New Plymouth.
Okay, ooh.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't see that one coming, did you?
No. Well, you know, I think they tell us about these concerts so far in advance because you have to save up so much to afford a ticket to go along. That's why.
We never talk about the cost of these concerts, do we? Because it'll probably just put people off. Another blast from the past. Do you remember Take That?
Yeah, I remember the name. I wasn't a fan, but I do remember them. Yes.
Yeah, they're going to be showing up very, very shortly as well. Minus, obviously, the only one that anyone can remember the name of, Robbie Williams.
Right.
We've got Wellington and the Trusts Arena at Auckland. They couldn't quite swing
Spark Arena. Right.
No.
Okay.
The Stranglers have only just been to Auckland, but they're coming back again next year.
Okay. Yep.
February, they're going to be in Auckland and Wellington promoting their classics collection.
Right.
So a greatest hits milking.
Yes, yes.
I'm saving the best for last, actually. I'll tell you in a second.
Oh.
Ariana Grande. Are you familiar with the young lady's oeuvre?
No.
Have you ever heard of her?
Yes, okay. I have heard the name. I think we might have. Yes, now I'm struggling off the top of my head to help you here, but you're gonna enlighten me.
She's a singer.
Thank you.
I mean, quite seriously, that's the extent of my knowledge. she's sung with the likes of Nicki Minaj, which is enough to terrify most people. She's coming in. When is she coming? We also know these things. In September, again, Spark Arena.
Right.
Or whatever it's going to be called by the time she gets here. Here's another name that you might actually possibly recognise, Harry Styles.
I do recognise the name, but he's a young man. I think he's been talked about quite a bit of late, has he not?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just you're going to have to fill in a bit more of... He was on, I saw him briefly on the Graham Norton show not that long ago, I think. And
you did, but he clearly made an impression, didn't he?
Oh, whew. He's a singer. See, in the time we've been talking, I've Googled him.
Oh, well played. Go on.
Oh, he was a member of One Direction. How could I not know that?
We both have daughters who are about the right age to drill these things into our heads, you'd have thought, to be fair. But apparently, I'm hearing that his new album is actually rather good.
Okay.
I've not heard it myself yet. Actually, he's only released one single from it so far, but the previews are saying it's actually a proper grown-up record.
Okay.
And he's going to be, again, at Spark Arena.
Right.
It's the second last venue of his tour, and that's going to be in early December.
Okay. Well, it's a bit happening in December. All right.
I know, but, and this, I mean, I hope you can contain yourself for this one.
Okay.
Doing an extensive tour, taking in Dunedin, Christchurch, Hamilton, Tauranga, Napier, Rotorua, and indeed, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the place now. Takapuna. Takapuna, that's the one.
Yes.
Boney M.
Ah. Okay, yes, I have heard of them. They were very much a band of my teenagerhood.
They might have been, yeah.
Yes, yes. Oh, okay. Well, I wonder if that's how many of the originals are still around.
Well, the poster does say featuring Maisie Williams.
Ah, okay.
So at least there is one member of the original band. I mean, obviously, you remember the story of them, don't you?
No, not particularly. I think they're not English. Were they German or something?
Were German, and they were basically created by German producer Frank Farian.
Right.
He basically needed a backing band. So he actually brought the singers themselves were actually West Indians.
Right.
And of the four of them, Maisie Williams, as far as I can tell, is the only one left.
Yeah, okay.
So it's, but we're going to be able to hear, you know.
So they did like Daddy Cool and Sunny and... songs like that. They were very Ma Baker. That was another one. I remember them. Well, they might. I wonder what sort of an audience crowd they'd get. Would it be? It's interesting to.
Well, we're gonna have to go just to find out now.
Yeah, we are.
Friday, June the 16th at the Bruce Mason Centre in Takapuna.
Oh, not that far away at all. Okay. Very good. Well, that's quite a lot of quite a smorgasbord there, I'd say.
There is. I mean, We've got also coming up next week, we should have photographers in place for Green Day at Vector Arena.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, the American post-punk band.
Yes.
We also got All Time Low next week at the Power Station, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
We should have photos of that show at on the website next week as well. So, yeah, there's a lot. I say it's a great time to be alive, I tell you, Simon.
It sure is. And, of course, the website, our website, which is cravepodcast.com, we regularly have great shots from not just Steve but other photographers as well from bands coming through. So it's really worth a check. And if you see something you like and want to comment about it, you can email us among other things. Email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter at Crave Podcast.
You can indeed. So, I'm Simon Mercier.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Excellent. Right, where are we? Where's the stop button on that?